You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Locked On Wolves Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves, and Monday was schedule release day, where you're listening now to this on Tuesday, most likely. Monday was schedule release day across the NBA. So today we're going to take some time to discuss the high points of the Timberwolves schedule, even though we know, as always, the general framework of the schedule and what it will look like each year. Still fun to break out everything or break down everything in the schedule for the upcoming season and look at it from a few different angles in terms of when the most exciting matchups are, when the former players are coming to Target Center, former Timberwolves players, and for fans that may not live in Minnesota, when their chance to see the Timberwolves are. The Timberwolves always travel as much or more than any other team in the league, so we'll talk a little bit about that and also back-to-backs and things of that nature. Then our other main topic today is we'll talk about Danny Chow's article on TheRinger.com entitled, "Are We Sure Karl-Anthony Towns Isn't the Best Big Man in the NBA?" It is absolutely a provocative title, but it's an extremely persuasive read, even if you go into it thinking, as I did, I wouldn't say he's the best big man in the league. Chow makes a really good argument for it, and I'm not sure that he actually believes it, but his argument is a pretty sound one, and I think it's easy to forget just how special of a talent Karl-Anthony Towns is. So we'll break that down a little bit with the high points in the piece, and we will talk about the other contenders in the league that would vie for the title of the best big man in the NBA. So we'll talk about that here in a minute. But first, let's talk a little bit about the schedule that was released this afternoon on a breathtaking NBA schedule release show at 2 p.m. Central. Just kidding. I didn't actually watch it. I was working. But we did get to see, you know, once that happened, every team was allowed to release their own schedule on their website. So we did get a pretty good look at what the Wolves schedule will look like this year and how the team broke it down on their website. Highlighting what Timberwolves.com felt were the high points of the schedule. So I guess kind of the high points, the Timberwolves will open the season on the road for the sixth straight time. I think the Wolves website noted it was something like 12 or 13 straight years the Timberwolves opened at home, which is crazy, and now the sixth straight year they're opening on the road, which is also crazy. This time, they'll be opening in Brooklyn at Barclays Center on October 23rd, which is a Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. Central, so 7:30 Eastern. In my opinion, the Barclays Center is probably the arena that looks the best on TV, and it is the one time all year that I will for sure watch the visiting team broadcast. Especially if it's Ryan Rocco or Ian Eagle. I don't know if he still does games there anymore, but they've got just a great team. Mike Fratello, occasionally the czar, will be the color commentator and looks really good on TV. It's going to be hard not to listen to Jim Peterson and Dave Benz on opening night, but we'll see. Maybe I'll record both broadcasts and watch it once with each broadcasting team. I digress, but the Timberwolves Nets opener on the October 23rd. Then they play in Charlotte that Friday, the 25th. The Nets obviously were a playoff team last year. Charlotte was not quite. They've kind of been in that limbo now for several years where they're hovering around that playoff, that 500 mark. So a chance for the Wolves to go 2-0 to start the season. Barclays Center won't be an easy win over the Nets, but it's certainly a possible win, and the Timberwolves probably should beat Charlotte. So they would have a shot to go home for the home opener on Sunday, October 27th as a 2-0 squad. So that'd be the ideal scenario, obviously. And who will they be coming home to face? The home opener will be none other than Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat. Obviously, the Wolves aren't his most recent team, or as I would like to put it, his most recent ex. But Miami should be a good team this year. There's obviously, you know, Butler's only played at Target Center once since he left via trade last fall. So Sunday, October 27th at 6 p.m., circle your calendars, which you probably already have because it is the home opener, but it's also Jimmy Butler. So there's that to look forward to. Go ahead and get that out of the way immediately. I thought it was kind of funny. Timberwolves.com didn't even mention Jimmy Butler in mentioning that it was a home opener. Maybe it's something to do with the fact that he's already played for one other team since, but considering just 12 months prior from that meeting, he would have still been on the Timberwolves. Remember, he played in, what, six of the Wolves' first nine games or nine of the first 12 games last year before he was traded. So we're talking less than 12 months later, he'll be returning to play against the Wolves in their home opener. Other key notes on the schedule, I guess we'll talk about other returning players first. Ricky Rubio comes back with the Phoenix Suns on Saturday, November 23rd, so a weekend evening game there. Obviously, Rubio came back, I think, four times, I guess, total with the Jazz over the last couple of years, but it'll be his first appearance in a Suns uniform, and of course, he'll be joined by Dario Saric, who was traded to the Suns in the offseason, so Wolves fans will get a chance to see a couple of former Timberwolves take the floor on November 23rd. And then the Suns don't come back until April 7th, which is a Tuesday night. But a couple of opportunities to see Rubio and Saric. And then Kevin Love, who obviously has been gone for a few years, but, you know, being one of the best three, four, maybe five players in Wolves history means that he gets mentioned. He'll come back on December 28th, which is the Saturday after Christmas, a Christmas Day, which, unsurprisingly, the Wolves will not be playing on Christmas Day this year. But their first home game following, they had a road game on the 26th, maybe Sacramento, I think is who it was. And then they'll return home to face the Cavaliers on December 28th. Should be a pretty bad Cleveland Cavaliers team. And Kevin Love has been hurt a lot the last couple of years, so it'll be good to see a healthy Kevin Love if he is indeed healthy. We hope that he is in late December. So that's another one to mark down. Overall, kind of overarching themes, the Wolves have four road trips of four games or more, which is a pretty high number. The toughest stretch of the season is going to be a six-game stretch in March. There's really no two ways about it. That's going to be the hardest stretch. Six consecutive road games. The opponents will be Houston, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Portland, Phoenix, and Utah. Phoenix probably is the worst team in the West, almost for sure. And Oklahoma City could rival them for that title, especially if Chris Paul is injured or traded or entirely disinterested or some mixture of the three at some point or another during the season. But those other four teams are all playoff teams, Houston, San Antonio, Portland, and Utah, and potentially four of the top five teams in the West, maybe four of the top six teams in the West. So not a cakewalk, and going 2-4 on that trip would probably be a success for this Timberwolves team. The 3-3 would be awesome. But that's from March 10th to 20th, so by that time we'll have a pretty good sense for just how good or not good this Timberwolves team is. Obviously, we'll have a much better idea of the playoff picture then too, but that is one stretch that is going to be extremely difficult regardless of how good the Timberwolves end up being this season. Overall back-to-backs, which is always something to look at, the Timberwolves play in 13. I don't have in front of me how that matches up with other teams in the league, but that's the same number of back-to-backs the Wolves played last year, and it didn't seem too crazy. And last year they got a lot of them out of the way pretty early on. So all things considered, nothing groundbreaking in this schedule. Not that we were expecting that. However, that one road trip is very tough. Thankfully, I mentioned the four road trips of four games or more and just the one of six games. The Wolves will have three six-game homestands that they will host. So that's obviously positive. The Wolves have been pretty good at home, even with as up and down as they've been over the last few years. You may recall the year they went to the playoffs against the Rockets in the 17-18 season. They were, I think, the second or third best team in the league at home. So definitely a positive draw in that sense when it comes to homestands. But October 23rd at Brooklyn is the date to circle on your calendars if you are just looking forward to watching regular season Timberwolves basketball. And then the home opener against Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat will be that next Sunday, the 27th, which is the third game overall of the season for the Timberwolves. All right, enough schedule talk for now. Let's talk about football. Not really, but I promise not to turn this into a fantasy football podcast, but we do have to quickly talk a little bit about fantasy football. If you play fantasy football, make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and Locked On Fantasy Football, as Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years experience covering fantasy. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else, then you'll be the same as everyone else. Instead, get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and put you ahead all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football is on your favorite podcast provider. Personally, I have probably too many fantasy teams to worry about each year, but I am gearing up for a keeper league draft here in the next week and a dynasty league rookie draft and that whole process pretty quickly. So it is that time of year. Make sure you're tuning in to Locked On Fantasy Football. All right, we're going to take a quick break. All right, let's move on to discussing Danny Chow's article on theringer.com. Danny's article, as I mentioned in our open, is entitled, get the exact title here, Are We Sure? Karl Anthony Towns isn't the best big man in the NBA. My quick reaction as somebody who is a Timberwolves fan and a Karl Anthony Towns fan and think he should have been on the All-NBA third team last year, well, I think he should have been on the third team. So that tells you what I thought of his last season, is that he was certainly one of the best six or seven, maybe eight big men in the league, but it would be tough to argue that he is the best. If you haven't read the article, I'd encourage you to head over to theringer.com to read it. Again, it's by Danny Chow, and he does a great job, primarily NBA coverage over there. But he actually makes a pretty compelling case. A lot of it has to do with age. He is the just outside the top 10 in NBA MVP futures odds, according to, I guess, these odds are according to FanDuel. And essentially, he's the youngest MVP contender in the entire NBA, and that's really not all that arguable, considering he is in that top 10, 11, 12, and he's the youngest one on that list. Chow also goes back to Cat's rookie year and discusses his insane rookie year numbers, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 1.5 blocks per game on a list with guys like Tim Duncan, Shaq, Hakeem, and David Robinson. And kind of goes through the past few years and how Cat isn't, he's become less Kevin Garnett than what people were expecting. He hasn't been as good on defense, but has been a better shooter than anyone even expected, and draws more of a comparison to Dirk Nowitzki than to Kevin Garnett. One interesting point that Chow makes that I think is really important for people to remember, Timberwolves fans and NBA fans across the board, Towns' extension is kicking in. When it expires, he'll be through his age 27 season. Chow says that's the same season that Garnett made his first conference final. That, of course, is with the Timberwolves, and the year that Dirk Nowitzki made his first NBA finals. So Cat has been in the league for 4 years. He's won the Rookie of the Year. He's been an MVP, he's been an All-Star twice, and he's entering his age 24 season. But he's still 5 years removed, or I guess at this point, yeah, five full seasons removed from the point where Garnett made his first conference finals. And everyone should remember, and if you're not old enough to remember, you've surely heard, or just look it up on Basketball Reference, Kevin Garnett made the playoffs and was ousted in the first round, I think, six or seven consecutive times before making the conference finals in 2004. Now, obviously, Garnett got the Wolves to the playoffs every year after his rookie season, essentially. And Towns has only been there once, and everyone knows Jimmy Butler was the best player on the Wolves team that went to the playoffs 2 years ago. But all that to say, if something clicks this year with Towns, and it seems to have already done that at the end of last season after Butler was traded and after Tom Thibodeau was fired and Ryan Saunders became interim head coach, then he might just drag this team to the playoffs. The Western Conference was tough when Garnett did that, but not quite as tough as it's likely going to be this year. The other point that Chow makes related to is what I just referenced, which is how well Towns played under Ryan Saunders last season. Let's revisit those numbers. There was a stretch in the middle that was just insane. He was, I think, leading the league in scoring over the course of a couple weeks in March, 2-3 weeks even. But in 37 games that Towns played after Ryan Saunders took over in early January, he averaged 26.8 points, 12.4 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and 1.3 blocks per game. The craziest thing, though, was his shooting splits. He shot over 54% from the field and 42% from three, maintaining 84% from the free throw line. And Chow also calls out his assist average, which is Garnett's career number. Longtime Wolves fans will remember that Garnett was like the only big man in the league having 2010-5 seasons. There were 2-3 seasons in a row, including his MVP year where he averaged over 5 assists a game. But it did take Garnett a little while to get there. And Towns seems to be getting to figuring out the distribution part of running an offense a little bit quicker than maybe even Garnett did. And Chow's final point, this kind of segues into that, is related to the NBA relying on this kind of space and pace offense and having big men facilitating more often, and smart teams knowing how to build around a big man, which is something that the Timberwolves never really figured out under Kevin Garnett, or with Kevin Garnett on the roster. It was something that Kevin McHale couldn't put his finger on, that Flip Saunders couldn't quite get there. And there were tons of factors. We're not going to get into that now, but obviously Garnett wanting certain guys on the team and not wanting other guys on the team. But there's no way around the fact that the Wolves struggled to build a true contending roster on Garnett. They were only true contenders one time when they were the number one seed and made it to the conference finals and probably would have been to the finals. And if they had gotten there, probably would have beaten the Detroit Pistons in the finals, except for Sam Cassell's injury in the conference finals against the Lakers. But all that to say, it was the roster construction around Garnett that the Wolves could not figure out. Karl-Anthony Towns is a very different player than Garnett. He's more of a shooter. He's more Dirk than KG in that sense. His defense is still developing, but he may be ahead of where Garnett was in terms of seeing the floor and distributing the ball at this stage of his career. Garnett obviously ended up just being an incredible player on both ends of the floor, top 25 players all time, hands down. Towns isn't to that level yet, not even close. But there are some things about Towns' game that I think we, at this point, are already taking for granted. Now, Cat's supporting cast, I'm not going to argue it's better. It's nowhere near where Garnett's was necessarily in this season they went to the conference finals. But a lot's going to hinge on guys we don't know much about, like Jarrett Culver. We haven't seen Covington play a full season. We haven't seen anybody play in this new Ryan Saunders offense that's going to be Gerson Rosas and Houston Rockets influence. So there's a lot of things there that we just don't know yet. But the argument that Towns is doing many of the things that Garnett did and also many of the things that Dirk did early in his career, but getting the opportunity to shoot even more three-pointers because of the way that the game has evolved, is extremely encouraging and really exciting as well. We just don't know what this could potentially turn into. Now, Chow calling Towns potentially the best big man in the league. Maybe, you know, if Towns drags this team to 45 wins and a 6 or 7 seed in the West, he's probably got an outside shot at getting some MVP votes this year, given his supporting cast, unless someone else breaks out in a huge way or Jarrett Culver's, you know, rookie of the year or something like that. And I guess at that point, you could make the argument he's the best all-around big man in the league. I think we'll need to see a little bit more improvement on the defensive end overall before we are singing that song of potentially best big man in the league. But Towns is absolutely on that track. Okay, one last quick football note. There's really no other way to say this other than the new Locked On NFL podcast is on fire. Last week, it was one of the most listened to NFL shows with the expert analysis of former NFL scout Matt Williamson and hosted by Brian Peacock. Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL with Matt's unique take on the game as a former NFL scout. Follow Locked On NFL now on your favorite podcast provider. All right, we're going to take one last quick break. All right, the final piece of Chow's article that we're going to talk through is some of the other names that he mentions as guys that could claim the title of best big man in the league. No surprises here, but we might as well talk through them and whether or not Towns could make the argument that he's better than any of these guys. Joel Embiid is the one. Well, let's not start with Embiid. Anthony Davis is the guy who, everybody said Cat could be the next Anthony Davis. But I think everyone many people lost track of just how good Anthony Davis was for the New Orleans Pelicans and just how dominant he is when he's healthy. But then again, the Pelicans only made the playoffs one or two times with Anthony Davis leading the way. Granted, he's had injury issues, but look at the teams that Garnett was dragging to the playoffs in Minnesota for all those years and the teams that Anthony Davis could not get to the playoffs. That's not a reason to say Towns is or isn't better than Anthony Davis. I think all things considered, both guys healthy, it's really close. Most people are going to say Anthony Davis. I think his defense gives him a slight edge, and he's been extending his range from the floor shooting the ball as well. I think Towns has a slight edge on offense. I think Davis has a slightly larger edge on defense. So today, right now, give me one guy for, you know, if the argument is just at this moment, who's the better player? No other, you know, in a vacuum, you'd have to go with Anthony Davis. But it is closer than probably many casual fans understand. I think that Karl-Anthony Towns is in that conversation. It's not crazy to make an argument that Towns, because of his versatility, is at this moment a better player. I just don't think it's quite true yet. Nikola Jokic is the other Western Conference guy who, I guess, that the three that everybody talks about are Towns, Embiid, and Nikola Jokic, as kind of all being in that same tier of young big men within a year in age and an experience of each other. Those three are often discussed, and Embiid and Jokic have done more in terms of getting teams to the playoffs. Embiid obviously hasn't done it as like the clear best player on a team. I guess you could argue a couple years ago he did, the year before Butler was on the team, so the true breakout with Philadelphia, but that's also been kind of a multi-pronged attack there, obviously. So it's difficult to say that, you know, he's the clear head and shoulders best player on that team, and with some of his minutes limits early on and concerns with him playing back-to-backs, that can hurt him a little bit in terms of the amount of production he's able to give a team over the course of a season. I don't think it's really fair or necessary to discount him in the who's the best player argument because of that. I think that there's a lot of noise in this argument, and if Embiid is that much better and that many fewer games, then that's fine. That means he's really good, and that matters. He did miss, you know, 18 games again last year. It feels like he played in more because he was so good when he played, but he only played in 64 games after playing in 63 the year prior. And Towns didn't miss a single game in his career until he was rear-ended in a car accident this past, late winter, and then ended up missing a game for that. And then there were, you know, at the end of the season, he sat out a couple of games with some knee soreness. But, I mean, Towns is the picture of durability, has been the picture of durability through four seasons, and Embiid has been the opposite. That said, he's been so good when he's on the court, it's hard to argue that hands down Towns is the better player. I think at this moment in time, I would argue Towns is the better player. I think you look at some of the advanced metrics, and certainly the offensive ones would suggest that he is, that the past couple of years for Towns have been pretty clearly better than Embiid's. A lot of that has to do with Towns' accuracy from three-point range and his consistency in that respect. I think that's probably the biggest differentiator. Embiid's tried to stretch his game out a little bit. I mean, he's shot 3.5 threes per game over the 3 years of his career, but he shot only 30% this last year while shooting 4.1 attempts per game. And, you know, Towns was a 40% guy the last couple of years, essentially. So that's the clear difference. Embiid's the better defender, but they're different. They are just different players. Embiid is better when he's playing down low and not messing with the outside shot, and Towns can do both, but it's actually better when he's launching more threes and then gets his pump fake working on the perimeter and can drive to the basket. That's one of those things that he does better than basically any other big man in the game, unless you're counting, say, Giannis Antetokounmpo in that mix. But driving to the basket at 7 feet tall and not crazy athleticism, but long strides and solid athleticism, it's hard to match that anywhere else in terms of big men. Jokic is the other one that I alluded to a minute ago. Jokic got Denver to the 2 seed in the West this last year as clearly the best player on that team. You know, he's the triple-double guy. He's a better passer than Towns. I'm not going to argue that Towns is a better passer. But, and Chow references this at the end of the article, Towns is Towns has the ability to take over a game in a different way than Jokic. Towns will take over with his offense, potentially with his rebounding, can make a big defensive play here or there that Jokic is probably less likely to make, but can also pass the ball. And the passing will be able to play off of Towns' scoring and his ability to be a scoring threat. Whereas with Jokic, it's almost the other way around. He's a distributor first and can score if he needs to and is a good scorer. But Towns' ability to truly take over a game as a singular force, really, that matters. And I think that that's kind of where he gets his edge over Jokic in that argument. I think it's fair to say that Jokic had a better season in 2018-19 than Towns. I'm not gonna argue otherwise. I think that the combination of things that Jokic can do, his per game scoring to rebounding was lower than Towns, yes, but the assists were a lot higher. The scoring ability overall was comparable, despite him only shooting, you know, under 31% from beyond the arc last year. Him being Jokic, I think it's fair to say Jokic had the better season between the two. That said, I think Towns should be the better all-around player and has been for most of, they've each played four seasons in the league. For much of that time, Towns has been much better than Jokic. Maybe not much better, but he's been better than Jokic. This past season, Jokic stepped it up a notch, and Towns obviously saw that. There's a little bit of a rivalry between the two, obviously. Division rivals play the same position, are constantly compared with one another. You can bet that Towns doesn't want to be in that same conversation with Jokic. He wants to elevate himself above Jokic. So I would think we're sitting here 9 months from now talking about Towns having a better season than Jokic. I would bet on that. I think that Towns, the way he played from essentially mid-January through the end of the season, would, if he sustains that for a full season, he's the best big man in the league. And I guess that that's essentially what Danny Chow was getting at in his article for The Ringer. That caliber of play from Towns is enough to call him the best big man in the league. So we'll see if that's something that he can pull off this season. I think there's obviously a lot of things that need to go right, but playing for Ryan Saunders and playing with more shooters around him, having a little bit more ability to freelance on offense and to be more involved directly on offense will be key for Karl Anthony Towns. And while I'm not subscribing to the theory that he's the best big man in the league, and I won't argue it, I will say that there is a solid chance that in 9 months, it's a very feasible argument to be making. And perhaps that's one that I'll be willing to make right here on this podcast. We'll see. All right. That's all we have for you today. We'll be back this week a couple more times as we continue looking at the Wolves roster. We'll pick up where we left off last week. In-depth breakdown of the Wolves wings will be our next topic. And then we're pretty close to getting into over-unders for the league. We're going to talk through every team in the league. I'll have a guest or two on to discuss over-unders. The Wolves will be included, but we're going to cover everyone as we kind of walk through all 30 teams. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. You're listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast. And we will catch you next time.